Good morning. Welcome to The Morning Show with community news and affairs from the Center. I'm Ron Fruit. Our program today welcomes Richland Center Mayor Todd Coppernall for a monthly update. We've extended the mayor the opportunity to be able to welcome a special guest. Last month, Marty Brewer, chair of the Richland County Board, was here. And today, very pleased to be joined by UW-Platteville Interim Chancellor Dr. Tammy Avetovich. And it's just a great chance for us to become acquainted and talk about things going on in our community. Mayor, good morning and welcome to you. Did you have a good Halloween? Did you have a prize-winning costume, might I ask?
I didn't. I went as an elected official, and nobody gave me any candy. It's tough. I made it fun. We were myself and the city administrator, Ashley Oliphant, and our city's finance committee, Ryan Cairns, Karen Templey, Melanie Walters, together with our city clerk treasurer, Aaron Joyce, we're working on the city budget, and Sean Walsh has been involved, and all of our department heads have been involved, and we were down there one night last week till midnight, because it's budget season, and you have to get it done, so I really didn't get to focus on Halloween too much this year, but which is too bad, because I love it. But Ron, thanks for having me down, as always. It's always great. I appreciate the forum, and I hear from people all around the area that appreciate it, too. So thank you again. And what happened here today, as Ron pointed out, last month I brought Marty Brewer down here, the chair of the county board, because, of course, our county's going through a significant review of their budgets and what will happen going forward. I thought it was important for the people in our area to hear directly from Marty, okay, what else is on people's minds? So how about the Richland campus, right, which has been here for generations? My family has had 9 family members attend that campus, including myself. And I get a lot of questions. You know, what's going on? What's the future? What's the present? What's the future? Well, instead of me coming down here and giving you bits of that, I thought, let's go to the source. So the interim chancellor of UW-Platteville is here today, and I'll let her take the microphone.
It's so good to have you here this morning. Welcome. What brings you to the community? Are there regular times when you get to step away from Platteville, Chancellor?
Well, as you can about imagine, my calendar is managed by a lot of people. And so when I come to Richland, it's, you know, sometimes it's scheduled, sometimes it's not. I wouldn't say that I have a regular beat here, but for example, I came last spring, I came this summer to meet with Friends of Richland, I came recently, a couple of weeks ago, to meet with some county and city and campus officials. It all kind of depends. Sometimes I get invited by kind people like Mayor Coppernall, and here I am. When he reached out to me last week, I believe it was, Todd, and it was just a very collegial reach out, gave me a phone call, and I'm like, well, sure, I'm going to do my very best to move my calendar around and make this happen, told me about the radio show. So my people move my calendar around, and here I am.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you're here. Tell us a little bit about yourself. We can know your background and just learn about the journey that brought you to UW-Platteville.
Well, it's quite a journey. I grew up on a farm in the middle of Nebraska, a little town called Ord, Nebraska. So I always tell people, if you put your finger right in the middle of the state of Nebraska, you'll probably put it on my hometown. We were farmers, beef, some swine, corn, beans, kind of depending upon what was going on. I was raised by salt of the earth, hardworking parents, and we still have our farm. Recently, my brother passed away, and so now we're leasing it. But so we're kind of in it like a lot of, you know, family farms is what do we do next? My mom's 94 years old, and we're going to have to see how that goes. But she texts me almost every day and lets me know what's going on in the state of Wisconsin. She's following the news better than I am. But I was a Cornhusker. I always have to confess that, Ron. I went to the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, and so I am a Cornhusker. I always tell people in Wisconsin I just need to fess that up right away. Got my degrees there. Got my PhD in exercise physiology, and then I thought I'd be a faculty member for the rest of my career. That didn't seem to pan out. I was on the faculty, and then somebody said to me, Tammy, would you be a department chair for a year? And I ended up doing that 7 years. And then a little bit later, they said, Tammy, could you be the interim dean for a year? And I ended up doing that 7 years. And so when a really good mentor of mine said, Tammy, I think it's time for you to consider the next step, I said, all right. And she helped prepare me, and I applied to the University of Wisconsin-Platteville as the provost. In February of 2020, I interviewed on campus. Shortly thereafter, everybody knows what happens, and campus is shut down and flipped to online, and then they extended me the offer, and for some reason I said yes. In all that chaos, I said, you know what, I'm gonna give this a shot and see how it goes. And so my husband and I moved away from our college-age children. Usually, you know, your children go away to college. We left them came in May of 2020. And typically when those things happen, you start July 1. But I knew I needed to get here early to prepare for the fall 2020 calendar year. So came here, and I was a provost during a pandemic. Not an easy thing to do, but I think, you know, we did the best that we could with what was happening. When Dennis Shields took another position recently down in Louisiana, they asked me to be the interim chancellor. So I took over that role on June 1st. And so what, I've been at this 5 months as the interim chancellor. You know, and I like to tell people there's quite a difference between a provost role and a chancellor role. You know, the provost, it's funny, we joke about this. What is a provost? If you ask students, they have no idea most of the time. So it's the provost and vice chancellor for academic affairs. So you're in charge of academic affairs and the academic programming and everything there, but you're also the number two on the campus, running the campus operations, making sure everything's going well on campus. And that includes our branch campuses as well. That chancellor role differs and it shifts a little bit, and I'm that person that's out, you know, working with system, working with the Board of Regents, working with wonderful mayors like Mayor Coppernall, county and city officials. I'm out and about, and I'm the external face of the campus. So I have a wonderful provost in Wayne Weber. He's taking care of campus operations, and he has great staff under him. But I've got a different role now that I'm exploring, and I'm enjoying myself.
Are there similarities? But no, you were at Wayne State before, correct?
Very good, yes.
Are there similarities between Platteville and Wayne State, or was it quite a transition for you when you came to Wisconsin?
So we are both four-year public institutions that focus on student success, focus on our teaching. You know, you have a lot of first-generation college students. You have Pell-eligible students. So that was why I applied to Platteville. I wasn't applying widely. In fact, I think, you know, I've put out a couple of applications, and lo and behold, here I am. So I very selectively applied to Platteville because it's in a rural area. It has the same kind of mission that my previous institution, and that's where my passion lies. And so there's a lot of similarities between the two institutions. I didn't want to go just anywhere. I wanted that rural university.
In fact, that rural community health is an important passion of yours, isn't it?
Right. So where I came from, we have what was called the Rural Health Opportunities Program. And so I brought that lens to Platteville as well. And I said, how can we best serve our rural communities when it comes to health care? So we have some wonderful new initiatives going on that I'd love to talk about if we have the time. One of them is a physician assistant program that's going to be on our Platteville campus. And that was a collaboration with the medical school in Madison. And what's really wonderful about it is that students can come to Platteville for the first years of their undergraduate degree. Then they can transition into this PA program. We have some agreements with them that if the students are doing well, they have guaranteed admission into this program. And they can become a physician assistant in 5 years. And PAs in particular are really good at serving the healthcare needs of our rural area. So we're very excited about that. We'll welcome our first cohort in May of 2023. And all of that will be done on the Platteville campus. And what's really nice about this as well, then, because we get to do those first few years, they could start at Richland. You know, these PA students could start at Richland, get some courses out of the way, transfer to Platteville. Same with Baraboo. They could start at Baraboo, transfer to Platteville. There's a pathway to PA from the Richland campus that we'd love to discuss with people. The other thing that we're doing is nursing. So I was at a Board of Regents meeting recently. Well, not recently. It's been a little while. But I was talking to the Oshkosh provost, and he said to me, well, our nursing program is great, but we're turning away people. You know, we don't have enough slots for everybody. And so I said, well, how can we help? Why can't we have offered nursing on our program that's an Oshkosh degree, not start our own standalone program that's high cost? Let's work together. Let's collaborate. And let's get a BSM degree started on the Platteville campus. Same concept. You could start here at the Richland Center. You could start at Baraboo. You could transfer over. But we're hoping that these students will come to the Platteville campus, finish and get their BSN. At the same time, they're getting a biology degree as well. So 2 degrees in 4 years, a BS in biology and a BSN in nursing. We think that's just good for students, and again, it serves those rural healthcare needs. So it's something I have a passion for, and we've got some other ideas of some things that we can do. But, you know, one of the things that I like to focus on is using state resources wisely, right? So we're not starting our own high-cost nursing program. We're not starting our own high-cost PA program. We're collaborating with others in the university system to make these pathways from our campus, but it's not as costly to do it in this way. And so I'm really committed to making sure that we're using state resources wisely.
Certainly a word that comes up when we talk about schools at all levels, Chancellor, is enrollment, mm-hmm. Finding those people. And then it seems as we wrap our head around the big issues, the impact of COVID and how that changed our world and how it changed education and then the battle for enrollment. How do you get your mind wrapped around that, coming in and trying to get used to a new system mm-hmm. that includes branch campuses and so forth?
So when I came here, enrollment had been on the decline at the University of Wisconsin-Platteville for a while, both at the branch campuses and the main campus. And so what I've done since I've become chancellor is like, we are going to focus on this and we are going to work together. I call it everybody get in the boat and start rowing. We're going to work together to help figure this out, because I think a lot of people understand that the number of high school graduates coming out of high schools is going to increase slightly and then start declining precipitously. So we need to prepare for the fact that we're going to have greater competition from other institutions of higher education in the state, and we're going to have fewer graduates coming out of high school. What are we going to do? What can we come together, everyone, come together? How can we help build up our enrollment to prepare for that decline in high school graduates? So when I came on as chancellor, I started out with 5 goals on my hand, and I'm like, nope, I'm going to focus on 2. We're going to focus on enrollment, and we're going to focus on our budget. And I brought a lot of leaders together in the summer, and I said, what are we going to do as a campus to start addressing these issues? Because it's going to take everybody. I'd rather it's a groundswell of ideas than me saying, we must do this. I want more people at the table having that conversation. So I don't know if you're aware, but our freshman class is up this year, and we're very excited about that. We had a 16% increase in our freshman class, which is unheard of. And there's a variety of things that happened to that we're starting to study that I think helped that. But the other thing that I would point out to you, how I'm wrapping my mind around this, is I like to use data. And we have a wonderful new data officer on our campus who's helping us understand what happened with this freshman class, because, gosh, if we replicate that, now we've got some momentum to build our enrollment back up. So data is really important. We just presented to our foundation about what we think happened with this freshman class. And part of it's tied to scholarships and the aid that we're giving to students. Because if there's nothing else that we also know, is that students are going to have more need if they want to consider going to college. And we need to be helping them out doing that. So we're talking about how scholarships can help with that. There's a variety of initiatives we have going on around enrollment, but we're paying attention to it, and we want to use data to make sure that we're making good, informed decisions.
In this community, how important is UW-Platteville-Richland as an access point to the university as a big picture, the borders of the state being the borders of the university?
What a wonderful term you just used. That's exactly what I consider Richland. It's an access point. It's that place where students can go take some classes in a more affordable manner, in a culture that maybe they're more comfortable in, and it's an access point to get them into higher education. We can debate the value of higher education. We can, should you go to college, should you not? We need to create those opportunities for students and make sure that they have a pathway to get into college. UW-Richland is an important piece of that.
And the same then for UW-Sauk County Baraboo, correct?
Right. It's interesting. I went up there recently as well. I make some regular trips up there. I'm invited up there to meet with very small groups of our stakeholders. So business and industry, we met with some K-12 leaders. We met with some law enforcement leaders. We're coming together and understanding some of the issues that they have. And let's create those unique areas of excellence on our branch campuses. Find that niche that will make them successful. That's what we're focused on. Wonderful conversations with these people. It's a two-way partnership, right? They're telling me what they're doing and what their needs are. I'm telling them what we're doing and what our needs are. And it's just a great partnership that we have going on there. Two-way street.
When I was a student on campus, it was the mid-70s, and in our computer programming class, Chancellor, we fed our paper roll-in that had the little, dots all punched out.
I remember.
And our social security numbers were posted right on the door of every professor's office. Things have changed a little bit, haven't they? As you look at that change and we think what was and what will be, how do we find, you know, a vision in a crystal ball that seems to be incredibly cloudy?
Well, again, I think it's getting out and listening. It's using that data piece that I've talked about so that we're using our data to make informed decisions, because let's face it, we all have limited resources. You know, the county does, the city does, the university does. Everybody is fighting the same kind of battle around that. So what I like to do is understand the data and make some good decisions around that. And then we have to be fiscally responsible as we do that. So that's why that data piece is so important to me. I want to use the state's resources as wisely as we can. So when we think about not having that crystal ball, actually we can do some modeling, right? We can use the data to do some projections. And we weren't doing that well, I don't think. I brought in somebody that's really, like I said, a data officer that's really helping us understand that. And while I don't think he would tell you he has a crystal ball, he can do some modeling to help us project out, here's where we need to be in 5 years if we want to have this, and here's how it impacts our budget. And here's how you can help, right? When we start telling those stories to our foundation, to our stakeholders, if we get everybody rowing that boat in the same direction, we can solve these problems together. And that's why I'm thrilled to be here today with Mayor and see how we can partner together to start solving some of these problems.
The opportunities that high school students have to take some college classes really gives them a jump start on their higher education career, doesn't it?
Absolutely. So, you know, one of the things we are talking about a lot, and some are doing it better than us, is dual enrollment, right? So getting some of those high school classes knocked out while you're in high school is really important. And there's a variety of reasons for that. The research will show you that when you take dual enrollment and get college credit when you're in high school, not only does it increase the likelihood that you will go to college, it increases the likelihood that you will graduate with some sort of a degree, right? So it's just the right thing to do. And for me, it's the right thing to do because it increases the likelihood that that kid that maybe like, oh, never thought about going to college, didn't have somebody at home telling them they should go to college, takes a college course and goes, oh, I can go to college, right? So I think it's the right thing to do for that reason. But not only that, if you get some of those hours knocked out early, maybe when you do go to college, you'll pick up that minor or that emphasis or that extra credential that will really get your foot in the door for a career. It gives you that flexibility and that freedom to do so. So we need to do better at that. I think there's some things that we can do around that. If there's some students that want to do some early entry types of courses, that's really important. But it's also more affordable for our students to get done, you know, these shorter pathways that I talked about where you can get done quicker. Getting these classes done at your branch campuses or at your technical colleges, that's much more affordable. And dual enrollment is affordable as well.
Will virtual education be a challenge in this data modeling to say, okay, what are students going to want? What are place-bound students going to need? And how are they going to be served?
Right. So higher education may not look like it did in the past, right? You know, we may not have the same types of things going on our campuses that we did before, but that doesn't mean we're not here, right? Virtual education, online education, hybrid types of learning environments, there's different ways to offer higher education moving forward, and that doesn't mean we're not here. Just because you don't see anybody sitting physically in a classroom may not mean, you know, that we're not here. We could be. And there's different ways to have a higher education presence now that we possibly need to focus on.
But when we think about the fact, and I'm not sure what the statistic is, but about how many new jobs there will be and jobs that aren't even existing now that right. You'll need to prepare students for,
right?
That's a difficult equation to put the variables in, isn't it?
It is. But, you know, one of the things that I tell people is we don't necessarily tell people what to think. We tell them how to think. You know, we teach them how to think, and that's that critical thinking piece. And our liberal arts and our courses in our liberal arts are really important for that when we think about how we teach our students to think. Because you're right, some of those jobs aren't even developed yet. So when they get out there, they may need to figure it out. But we're hoping we're giving them that foundation to do that. And I think you're exactly right. We need to prepare our students for what we don't even know yet.
And I think, you know, there's certainly roles for virtual education, but I think that the real life skills that you gain in a college experience, the people you meet, the broader thinking that you're challenged to do, maybe the activities that you get involved in that weren't available before, those have value, I think.
That's what I tell our new students. I'm in front of our new students a lot. I give them welcomes to campus, and I say, get involved. Do something you weren't, you know, maybe necessarily doing in high school. Find somebody else. Understand another person's perspective. That is so valuable when we think about preparing our students for the future. And our employers talk about that. You need to be able to communicate. You need to be able to think. You need to be able to interact with other people. You know, those are all the things that it's not just the knowledge. It's how you interact with others and understanding those other perspectives. So you're absolutely right, Ron. And we think we do a nice job of that. I was with some students last night and we were asking them, well, what is it about Platteville, you know, that you love? What is it about the university that you love? And almost every one of them said the people, right? The people that they interact with on a daily basis. And so that connection cannot be something that we disregard. We need to continue with that.
Dr. Ivetovich, is there something that you would like to share that I didn't give you an opportunity in your schedule here this morning?
I just want to thank the mayor for inviting me today. He's been a true partner to us, reaching out, calling me with that personal touch, inviting me here. That's what I love, and I'll continue to partner. You know, these are challenging times for all of us, and we're going to all have to come together and come up with a sustainable model that works for everybody, and I'm committing to being a good partner in that.
Ron, if I could.
Certainly, let me get your microphone up there, Mayor. Go ahead.
That helps. Thank you, Ron. Okay, so one point I wanted to make, and the main reason, well, there are two reasons that I invited the Chancellor here today. The first one is simply to let this community hear her voice, because I think a lot of them never had it, and I think that needed to be corrected. Now it was. The second one is more than once in private conversations, not in meetings, the Chancellor has stated to me emphatically Platteville's commitment to remaining in Richland Center, and the rumor that won't go away, that that's not true, or that there is a plan to close, all of these things that keep resurfacing. Chancellor Ivetovich has refuted and has told me that the commitment is there to be here long term. And I know she's got to go in a minute here, but I wanted to give Tammy a chance to address that if she wants to do so.
Well, and what I tell people is, you know, a higher education presence in Richland Center, I think we can do that. You know, we can have a higher education presence here. And as I've said to the mayor, it may not look like it did in the past. It may be a different way of approaching it or offering it. We have to figure out the higher education footprint on the campus. But that doesn't mean we're not here. We may be present. It just doesn't look how it used to look. And I hope people can wrap their arms around that.
What advice would you give to that senior in high school who will be making lots of important decisions mm-hmm. in the next few months, Chancellor?
You know, they have a lot of options. And so I think exploring those options, but reaching out to the people on our campuses and having them asking the questions that they need answered. Don't be afraid to do that. We have so many people that are willing to help make those decisions, because at the end of the day, we want to advise the student to go where it's best for them, whatever their aspirations may be. And so we want to understand these students, and I think we've got lots of good recruiters out there helping us understand our students and asking those questions, and we will advise them to go where they need to go. And then if they want to change their mind, we will help them change their mind. But ask a lot of questions. Reach out to us. We have many people that are willing to help.
Thank you for giving us part of your valuable time today. Good
Thank
to have you.
You
here.
Thank you for inviting me.
You're entirely welcome. And we'll continue our program with Mayor Coppernol in just a moment. But certainly pleased to have UW Platteville Interim Chancellor Dr. Tammy Ivetovich as our guest on this part of the program. We'll return with more of The Morning Show in a moment. Welcome back to The Morning Show. Mayor Todd Coppernol joins us on the program today. Well, tomorrow will be Election Day, Tuesday, the 8th of November. It's a good time to say thanks to our poll workers who really perform incredible service to our community.
They do, Ron. Thanks for saying it just as you did. Poll workers, they're sort of overlooked, forgotten, right? They're just the people there, except they're not. You can't have an election without their commitment, which we're fortunate to have a lot of great volunteers in our community every year. We do again this year. And of course, our city clerk treasurer, Aaron Joyce, has been working very hard in preparation. There are already, as you might imagine, in today's world, quite a few people have voted in advance. I don't. I like the experience of going to the pool, and I never find, I don't usually get there till after work, so I don't typically run into a long line. I enjoy it, and I always like to see those volunteers there and converse with them a little bit, and also whoever's there that just voted. It's just fun for me outside. Hey, how have you been? I grew up with that. Maybe someday I'll vote absentee, but right now I still like to go down to the poll.
Well, and our machines, you know, that's been a recent upgrade, but they are not connected to the internet in any way, shape, or form. Am I right?
Correct. No, great equipment, new equipment, but that's right. They are not connected to the web.
So what you do is you mark your paper ballot, and it's machine read when you feed it in when you leave.
That's right. So it's all kept in-house, so to speak. That's right. And then all the counting and all of that is done by our local people, as it always was. It's just better equipment to make it easier for them.
Is, you know, I think about just the role of finding enough poll workers. Is that something the city's been able to do without extreme challenge?
We have. It's more challenging than it once was. Like so many other things, if you talk to anyone that's involved in any civic organization or any club, there's just fewer participants than there were. That was a trend before COVID, but COVID really impacted it. Obviously, we were all told to stay away from other people and stay home and all of that. Well, that changed a lot of people's lives, right? And it's been a process, and still is, to get more people back out in the world. It's happening, though, and I don't see it as a long-term problem, but it is different than it once was.
You talked about budgets. You know, how is the process going, and where does our community look like as you get that process underway?
It's going very well. It's always a challenge because, obviously, it takes a great deal of time, and it's critically important. It's setting up what the city will spend money on for the next 12 months. It's millions of dollars of all of our money, and we take it very seriously. I'm proud of the people involved, every single one of them, including our city department heads, who every year are asked to bring us their proposal for their department. And at this point, this is the first year we've got an administrator involved, and Ashley has met, which this is one of the two main reasons we needed an administrator. She's been able to accelerate this process, even though it's still time consuming for good reason. She met in advance with each department head to kind of review and maybe alter, amend, make suggestions to them before they got to the finance committee and myself and so on, which has helped all of us just have more information sooner and get through the process hopefully better. Right now, the city's in good financial shape. We get audited once a year. That's going on right now. The last two audits that I've seen as mayor, we were told we're in excellent financial condition. Right now, we'll hear it again in a few weeks. I don't know the outcome of that, but nothing has happened that would make me think that will change.
Well, as you think about things that will be, initiatives in the upcoming budget, are there some things there that will be priorities for the city mayor?
Right. So just look at the world right now. We've had rampant inflation, right? So things cost more than they did for the city, just like they do for everyone else. So we've had to put emphasis on the same things we all do. Before you worry about that big project you wanted to do or that flashy new toy that department head says he has to have, you have to make sure you have gas in the police cars, right? Just start right there, that you've taken care of the employees the best that you can. You know, we're always going to have limitations there because, of course, we're using tax dollars to pay bills. So it's different than a private business in that sense, but make sure you've taken care of your people as best you can as they face all of this. It's the same challenge as any private employer has, attracting and retaining good people. We're focusing on that. The last thing we need is chaos among the city employees, so we're focusing on that. And then on top of that, I say it, I think every single time I'm here, continued focus on adding housing to this community. And we're making some headway there right now as we speak. There's an engineering study being done on the Storyfield property. No, I do not ever expect that entire area to be filled with houses, but I do expect some homes to be built on that property. I've said that many times. That shouldn't be a surprise to anyone by now. But to make sure no mistakes are made, we've got an engineering study being done so that we have completely accurate information, everything that's buried underground, how many homes can go there and be supported by the existing infrastructure, for example, water mains and so forth, without incurring undue or big expense to do this, and what will have the impact we're looking for without disrupting the neighborhood. All of this stuff is being studied right now. That information should be in our hands in the next few weeks, and then we'll move forward on that. There are a couple of other places where we're talking to landowners about possibilities. And the whole point is, obviously, if someone, for example, works in Richland Center, we would prefer that they live here, right? That makes them a property tax payer, and more payers makes it easier for all of us who are already here. Fewer people means more from each one of us. More people means more help paying the bills. Okay, if you just understand state law, the term net new construction comes up all the time. If you're going to add revenue to the city and the county to help pay the bills, you need new structures, meaning homes, commercial properties. Think of it this way, taxable buildings. If you're not adding them, you're not adding money. And of course, as inflation runs hot, if you're not adding money, you have to cut things. There's no third choice, right? You add money, you cut things, or what? No third choice. So working again on that, and making some progress. I'll have more to say on later shows. I don't right now, but I will say making some progress.
One of the things, the word that Jason Glassbrenner, Economic Development Director, talked about last week in understanding what's being done with that study at Story Field is conceptual. This isn't a final design. This is a what could we do possibly if we desired.
That's right. So multiple builders have expressed interest in that property. When I was elected mayor, the big struggle to adding things was to get a developer interested. It wasn't happening. There are several interested now. They see growth beginning to happen in our community, and they hear the effort going into it and see it. So they're responding. So all this really is, in that context, Ron, the way you stated that, what this is to give them ideas. What's possible to do here? It doesn't mean they have to do exactly what's drawn up. It's this is the idea. You can do this many of this and don't go over there. That kind of information that any builder would have to need to come up with a final design. If they don't know what they can build and where they can put it, they can't proceed.
I enjoyed a smooth cruise on 7th Street the other day.
Yes. But yes, street department head Mr. Terry Nelson had described 7th Street as the worst street in the city. The condition it was in had just reached an unacceptable level. And people probably, if you live in that neighborhood, you know this without me saying it. If you don't, there were consistent issues with the water main. It honestly, in my opinion, should have been fixed and updated years before those of us who are making these decisions got here. There were over 20 clamps on that water main. It had been repaired so many times. And you can't just keep waiting. So our city is in the hills, right? It's not a mystery. Look around and there's hills, steep hills all around us, and a lot of our homes are sort of nestled in those hills. Well, there were not storm sewers up there, and that's a big problem because as that water runs down the hill, which of course it will do, that's bad for that pavement. And then with the weather changes we get, you get pooling in the intersections at the base of the hill, and then that freezes and thaws and freezes and thaws. It causes constant damage to the pavement. So there are now storm sewers up there, which is a giant step forward. We've replaced the infrastructure. The water main's new now. We shouldn't have that ongoing issue anymore. And you're right. When you drive down 7th Street, you're not testing your shock absorbers now.
Mayor Todd Coppernall is with us on the morning show. We'll continue our conversation in a moment. Welcome back to the morning show with news from the center today. Richland Center Mayor Todd Coppernall is our guest. Mayor, when we think about the expanding costs, inflation and so forth, and you know how that will impact street repairs and constructions, is that one of the challenges that you face in the new budget, or at least impacting your plans as you think about how you can improve the infrastructure of the city in the next year or two?
Sure. As you can imagine, just like in any household, inflation's impacted anything we want to do. Absolutely anything we want to do. So sure, we have a plan. We will proceed with continued road work in that same neighborhood. We did 7th Street this year. It's a 3-year plan. That whole area up there had fallen into disrepair, water mains and pavement, the whole thing. So next year's plan in the summer of 23 is where the 7th Street project stopped at the top of 7th Street to take it from there to Cedar Street, wrap around and come down 8th Street until you reach Salutis, which of course is the road into the cemetery. So think of essentially, I guess, the top half of 8th Street once you pass Park Street, up around to where we did 7th Street this year. For the same reasons, no storm sewers, terrible pavement, and the same issues, water main issues, which we've got to resolve. So yes, of course, we'll pay close attention to the budget, because the thing is, that's work that has to be done. I just stated before the commercial break, there should have been storm sewers, honestly, put in some neighborhoods in the first place when they were built. I'm sure they weren't done to save money at the time and things like that. That's understandable, except it led us to where we are. And we've got to do this. If we simply replace the pavement and don't put storm sewers in, we'll just repeat the problem. If we pour storm sewers in and we leave the rotten pavement, well, what have we done? And, of course, you have to have the water service. You can't leave a faulty water main forever. You got to finally address that. It will get done, but, yes, we'll pay close attention to the budget. And, of course, it'll be a bid process like it always is. We were fortunate this year. That project went very well. I heard very little from the neighbors, and I live right behind them on 8th Street. I had a lot more visits to the neighborhood last year on the project we did than I ever had to do this year. I'm very pleased with that. We're hopeful that next year's project goes as smoothly. And yes, we will be budget conscious all the way through.
Arguably, I think one of our community's greatest assets is its park system. And recently, if I'm not mistaken, you took steps forward to provide more security and credibility for protecting that asset.
We did. The city has invested in security cameras. I am probably overdue. Again, you know, you look at things and say, yeah, we need to do this. The reason I say that, and this really disappoints me, is that periodically we get vandalism in our parks. And we've taken steps to address these things and made some of the things better. But the bottom line is you can't be down there all the time, and there are people there all the time. It's a public park. And we've had some issues this year with some broken lights on the dike, which obviously was intentional. And we were attempting to put a stop to that, among other things. If you just think about it, the value that our community center, senior center brings to the community, the value the aquatic center brings, the value that the Killian Meyer building brings, and so on. They're big assets. They're very important to everyone who lives here. The shelters down there, everything. So let's make sure that we do what we can to keep them like that and to hopefully deter the folks who might cause trouble down there. We're not looking to necessarily come and get you, which we're more than willing to do. We're hoping that you'll think twice and stop before you break the lights on the dike.
Well, and the other aspects, you've had challenges over the years in other areas too, haven't you?
We have. And all of this is just, I'm not necessarily happy about it because I wish it wasn't necessary, but it is. We're living in the times we're living in. And the technology exists to help, for example, law enforcement do their job. You know, it's easy enough to be somewhere at night when no one's around. Okay, listen to me right now. There will be a lot more security cameras in place all through the city parks. And in the future years, I would imagine in some other city properties as well. That's no joke. That's a commitment. And we're doing it now and we won't stop.
Panorama Estates, we know that building number 2 is in the offing. How is that coming, Mayor?
It's coming. There have been some delay. It's coming at the speed that any construction can be done right now. I don't know how many of your listeners are aware of how difficult it can be right now to get the materials it takes to do the building. The labor, too, but the biggest issue right now, things like transformers, it sounds so easy, but they're backordered to the moon right now, and the cost is going crazy. On those, just as one example, the project's going to happen. It's a 45-unit building, just like the first one was. Obviously, we had hoped that the groundbreaking would have happened by now. It has not. It will. They're coming. The city's committed to it. The builder's committed to it. We've just had to deal with some delays in the era we're living through.
One of the challenges, it would seem, if I was mayor or a member of city council, would be dealing with dilapidated properties in the city. That is one of the tough issues you face, isn't it?
It is. And we've been, as a group, that would be myself, the city attorney, the city council, you know, the DA, the judge, you know, all the way through the police department. We've been much more vigilant on trying to deal with this. It's complex. You can't just, there are laws for a reason, rules for a reason. Private property means something. So you have to work through the system, I guess the best way to say it. But we're doing that. And I will say to those who don't want to comply, there are also laws for a reason. And we intend to enforce them. We have been. And several properties are in better shape right now than they were a year ago. There's no doubt of that. And some aren't. And we know it. And we're on it. And I talked to Billy Jones, who is the police chief, and Chris McGow, who's the city attorney, regularly on this point. I know it matters a great deal to our citizens, and it does to all of us who are currently serving the city as well. We're on it. We won't stop. It just takes, you can't back off that point. It takes consistent effort. And as soon as you relax, something will come up. It's just part of human nature, I guess. That there's always somebody, I guess, but we're on it. Seriously, several properties are in much better shape than they were before we began to take this action. Some aren't. We know it. We'll stay on it.
If somebody says, I have a real concern with property XYZ, can they share that with the city?
Of course. If you believe there is a violation to city ordinance, which would be public nuisance, so now we're talking about things that could create, for example, a health issue, you know, unmowed lawns and just piles of debris or what have you in the lawns, that kind of thing that, of course, is not allowed by city ordinance. The right thing to do is to call the city police department, which is 647-2103, report that property to them. It's fine to tell me. It's fine to tell your older person. And by the way, if you weren't aware, if you live in the city, you have two older persons, no matter where you live. And obviously, that's perfectly fine. It's encouraged to make sure we know. But the law enforcement end of things lies, of course, in the hands of law enforcement, which, of course, is the Richland Center Police Department.
Well, let's end on a positive note, and that is the partnership it takes to make Rotary Lights in the Park work. Boy, it really is an incredible show before the show opens the night before Thanksgiving.
Well said. There's so much that goes on behind the scenes to prepare the park, to get everything in place. And then, of course, for all of the people who have their exhibits there to come down and get everyone ready. And the people involved every year do so much work. People see them when they drive through the lights, and they might say thank you for being out here in the cold or whatever. But long before that, weeks before that, there are people, city employees, volunteers, you name it, people representing the various businesses who are participating out there preparing the grounds, getting things in place. And it's not a little bit of work. It's quite a bit of work. And what's happened with our Rotary Lights in the Park is it's taken off. The popularity just grows every year. And we've got people visiting from all around the area. Now, this isn't just a Richland Center thing anymore. It happens in Richland Center. This is what people should love about the Rotary Lights in the Park. It is a tremendous draw to our community, something that we'd love to see more of, right? People visiting and learning about our community and spending some time down here. The other thing that it is an example of what else might be possible that will do the same and draw people here. So let's touch, before we go, briefly on the city auditorium, which now has a working elevator. That building was built, I believe, in 1913. I think I have the right year. So we're getting close to 110 years old. And for the first time ever, it has a functioning elevator, which we did the ribbon cutting on a few weeks ago. And then, of course, a concert was held in there to tremendous reviews. People really had a good time. I anticipate more and more events in that venue as more work is done to renovate. And I know there's a new tenant renting the top floor. Another positive development here in town. You know, the good things are there. Sometimes you have to look a little bit. Maybe you didn't hear it yet. I try to come down here and share as much of it as I can. But if you didn't know those things, there's a brand new tenant in the top floor of the city auditorium. There's a brand new elevator, beautiful state of the art, on the city auditorium. There will be more events down there for people to have a good time. I anticipate business meetings. All of these things can happen in there. And then one last one, because I don't want to forget this. I have to thank the folks who own the Starlight 14 Drive-In, and I have to thank the folks who own Vitesnik Power Sports, because they collaborated. This was a project.
Now, don't leave out the National Weather Service.
And the National Weather Service, yes, we called in advance, and we insisted that it be 74 degrees at sundown in late October with no clouds in the sky.
How did that happen?
I can't believe it. So the idea for an ATV night at the Starlight 14, I thought of this thing in 2018. I wasn't even an elected official. I just said, wouldn't that be a cool twist?
And you just bumped your head.
Yeah, we couldn't do it because because of a lot of things. There's since been an ownership change at Starlight 14. Of course, it was closed for a while. COVID happened, all of that. And the county ordinance was such that it wouldn't allow these vehicles to be on the road late enough to get home. So a lot of stuff had to happen. And one at a time, those things did. And finally, it became possible to do that. And so, Tony Johnson, thank you out there. I know you're listening. And everyone who works at Starlight 14. And the folks at Vitesnics who stepped up and said that we agree, let's do it. And then it was promoted well. We got a great turnout. The weather was perfect. And that time of the year, the movie started up probably 6:30. So we're done at 8:30. So people were able to drive home without being out till 1 or 2 in the morning. It was perfect. So they just showed the one movie so that people could get home at a decent time, right? And then, really, 74. We're sitting there in T-shirts in the dark in October when you should be freezing.
I'm scratching my head thinking, how did they pull this off? What was the chance?
It was amazing. And what Tony said to me, and I'll repeat this because this was really his point in doing this. Those folks have really put effort into revitalizing the theaters in town and make them fun and bring events there, not just movies and all of these things. And what he wanted to get out of this, which he was thrilled they did get out of this, was to really, yeah, that was UTV night at the drive-in, but that those vehicles are welcome anytime. And that's what he wanted the community to understand. In the summertime, if you want to take in a movie in a different experience, if you own an off-road machine, you can bring it there now. And that's really what he was doing. Everybody had so much fun. And the turnout was great because his run, I mentioned a couple of times, the weather couldn't. You can't draw that up. Nobody should ever expect mid-70s at sundown in late October. And that's what it was. And everybody was just be able to relax and have fun. I'm only telling that story because it was something fun in our community that's new now and an opportunity for people to do that when they want to do that going forward. And I think people should know about that possibility.
That's awesome. Good to see you. We'll see you next month.
Thanks for having me on, Ron.
Mayor Todd Coppernol has been our guest on today's morning show.
Thanks, Ron.